there's three important things to open up for college athletic opportunities. It's number one, are you eligible and admissible? Number two, can you play? And number three, what's your character? And I wish, and I want to educate and work on this. And I think if we could just instill that, you want money for college, get good grades. Mm-hmm.
Welcome to Field Goals for the Focus Driven Athlete, hosted by Glenn Hames, where we share tips and strategies that help amateur athletes, coaches, and teams achieve their on and off the field athletic goals. Our show discusses topics important to the elite amateur athlete. Whether you play football, basketball, soccer, or any other active sport, either on the field or court, our experienced industry experts, coaches, and former professional athletes will provide firsthand insight on topics that will give athletes who desire to play sports at the highest level an edge over their competition and undoubtedly will help turn their athletic goals into a reality. When there's a new season, there are new goals. What's your field goals? Now that the fall sports season has finally come to a close, many high school students will be turning their attention towards their recruiting process and their academic eligibility requirements that will allow them to play sports in college. So instead of 'tis the season to be jolly, realistically, it's more like 'tis the season of final exams, standardized testing, and college visits. But unfortunately, high school students pursuing a collegiate career often think they can rely on their athletic ability alone to get the best offers to play at the next level. Yeah, despite what you might have heard, it don't quite work like that. Now, while athletic ability is the main basis of evaluation for coaches, you best better believe grades and academic eligibility are the two biggest factors that coaches highly value when it comes to the recruiting process, because coaches are looking to recruit student athletes, not athlete students. And coaches view poor academics as a red flag. And can you really blame them? I mean, they're looking for players who can transition smoothly from the demands of high school to the demands of college, because coaches value players who they can rely on to show up to every practice and are eligible to compete for every game. And grades play a big role in dictating a player's availability, because if a player is not meeting the academic requirements at their college, there is no way they'll be able to qualify to compete on the field or court. And trust me when I say this, coaches do not want to recruit players who run the risk of being disqualified due to poor grades. And to put it bluntly, they know there are professors out there who are not going to give a damn about you just because you're a student athlete. Don't believe me? Case in point, let me present to you Exhibit A. Remember earlier this year when Duke quarterback Robbie Leonard led the Blue Devils to an impressive 28-7 upset over Clemson on the Monday night? Yeah, he thought that his performance would allow him to get an extension on a homework assignment that was due at midnight. So what does he do? He goes on national TV during a post-game interview and pleads to his professor for an extension since he was a little occupied for the last several hours and had not completed it. And let's just say he didn't get the response he was hoping for, because his professor shut that request down with the quickness. Now, I gotta admit, I actually thought it was a pretty slick of him to ask his professor on national TV for an extension. And quite honestly, I actually think he deserved it. I mean, come on, especially after helping Duke end a 28-game losing streak to a top 10 ranked opponent. But as impressive as that win was, it apparently wasn't good enough to win over Riley's professor. And I ain't gonna lie, I actually felt sorry for the kid, because I knew he was in for a long night. But hey, that's Duke for you. But seriously, coaches want players who possess a willingness to learn, as opposed to athletes who solely rely on their athletic abilities. And for them, grades are a good indication of how much time individuals put into their studies. So here are four questions college coaches ask when they discover prospects they may want to recruit. Number one, can the athlete compete at our level? Two, can he or she improve our team? Three, will the athlete be admitted to and thrive at our college? And four, if so, how much academic money will he or she qualify to receive? So as you can see, grades closely trail athleticism, and for a coach, Grades measure effort, which lets them know that a potential recruit is willing to learn, values studying, and seeks to continue improving, which translates to having an athlete that's capable of competing at their level. Now, I know all that might sound like a duh statement, but it's the foundation of any successful program. Every roster spot is precious to coaches, and each recruited athlete is expected to contribute. Because college coaches want athletes that they can graduate and can help the team GPA. The scholarship money they spend on recruits is a true investment in their program and their institutions. Don't believe me? I'll present to you Exhibit B. In January 2015, a few days after winning the national championship, Ohio State quarterback Cardale Jones shocked fans and football analysts by saying that he wasn't ready to go pro and that it was important for him to graduate from college first, which was a stark contrast from his freshman year when he came in and stated that he had gone to Ohio State to play football and not to play school and that classes were pointless. Now, the NCAA has maintained for decades that its primary goal is to help scholar athletes receive an education that will prepare them for life beyond sports. And here's what we do know. Every college has its admission standards. Many are loftier than the NCAA's baseline eligibility requirements. And that leaves athletes with passable or middling grades in a bind because so many coaches can't recruit them since those athletes can't get into their schools. And the higher high school athletes' GPA and test scores, the more college doors that will open. And the more doors that open, the more opportunities that can potentially be for the athlete. There's so much more that I can unpack with this topic, and we'll continue to talk about this subject because this is the gateway to college and receiving a free education while playing the sport that you love. And this brings me to today's guest. I've been knowing Kim Michelson for over a year now, and she's an academic trailblazer for student athletes in both high school and college. She has mentored hundreds of student athletes through the college recruiting and eligibility process to help them attain their dreams of playing collegiate sports. Before Kim ventured out into entrepreneurship, she was the executive director of Beyond Sports Foundation, which was a very unique nonprofit that works with high school student athletes from underserved communities to transform their athletic ability into a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And during her tenure as the executive director of Beyond Sports Foundation, 89% of their students enrolled into four-year universities on athletic scholarships. And in 2019, Kim and her co-founder, Joyce Anderson, started Honest Game and set out on a mission to ensure high school student athletes and families have equitable access to a college education. Honest Game is a public benefit corporation that empowers schools and student athletes with a plan that provides guidance on the classes, grades, and test scores they need to meet NCAA academic eligibility status. And today, Honest Game has helped over 200,000 students meet their college sports goals. As a co-founder and CEO of one of the fastest growing sports and educational technology companies, Kim has committed herself to create a personal and realistic post-secondary pathway for every student athlete while supporting high school administrators. But Kim's passion for student athletes and academia started when she was a ninth grader in high school. She created history by becoming the first female athlete in the state of California to play for the men's varsity basketball and baseball team. So I can't wait to hear more about that. So let's get this show started. My guest on the Field Goal Spotlight, co-founder and CEO of Honest Game, Kim Michelson, coming up next on Field Goals for the Focus-Driven Athlete. Welcome back to another edition of the Field Goal Spotlight, and I am so thrilled to have my next guest on the field with us today because almost a year ago at this same time, we were actually scheduled to have her on, and at the last minute, she fell ill, and her co-founder, Joyce Anderson, jumped right in to cover for her, and since then, I promised to give her an opportunity to have her on to tell her story, and now, a year later, here we are. Kim Michelson, welcome to the field.
Glenn, thank you so much for having me. I'm really honored to be here.
Absolutely. I'm honored to have you on. And Kim, before we get started, you know, we got to give a shout out to our girl, Tanya Sims, for actually making the connection between you and I over just a year ago. And it's been great. So shout out to T Sims.
Shout out to T-Sims.
You and I have had multiple conversations over the last year, and I can't thank you enough for making the time to join us today. And I said this to Joyce when she was on, and I'm going to say it to you also. I think that what you guys have created and the work that you and your team are doing is just simply phenomenal. And like I told you when we first met, I sure wish Honest Game was in existence 10 years ago when my son was in high school, because we certainly could have used your guys' service at that time.
Yeah, I am really grateful that you said that. You know, I guess that's innovation, right? It comes when it comes. And I recently met with a student early on when we created Honest Game. And that student said his eyes got really big and wide. And he just said, "Where were you, mm-hmm. you know, 8 years ago?" So I'm grateful to be here. And I'm grateful that, you know, we can have the past to learn from mm-hmm. to sort of make sure that we're creating innovation that's really needed to help students and families and unlock opportunity for the future.
Yeah, absolutely. The best is yet to come. So can't wait to see what's happening next with you guys. Kim, there's the whistle. And for us, that means it's time to get on the field. So you ready to take the field?
Absolutely.
All right, let's jump into it. So, Kim, I have a 6-year-old daughter who absolutely loves being the center of attention. And I'm talking about getting up on stage and singing and dancing and acting. You name it, she does it. She's not afraid or shy at all of the limelight. And I know that you grew up on the West Coast in Santa Monica, California, which is not too far from Hollywood. But growing up, your interest wasn't necessarily focused on singing, dancing, or acting. You actually developed more of a special interest in playing sports. So where did that interest and love of playing sports at such a young age come from?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. I think, you know, everybody's got to find their unique talent, their superpower. And I think when you're young, you start to sort of develop what that is, you know, and typically I believe it's what you are good at and what you like. They sort of, if you can find something that sort of connects the dots, you're going to get a lot of confidence and feel good about yourself. And so for me, that was athletics. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it was when I was playing and when I was on the field and being part of a team very, very early on. And that was what got me excited. I was very competitive. So being so competitive, it was a way that I could do it in sort of, I guess, you know, a healthy realm. Mm-hmm. And it was my superpower. Just like for your daughter, it's about singing and dancing and being that center of attention. And I think it's important, right? As a parent, right? You got to nurture that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And as you talk about athletics being your superpower, like most of us growing up, you were also a multi-sport athlete, but was there a particular sport that you focused on more than the others? Or were you the athlete that played everything from the beginning? Because for me, when I started out playing baseball, but it wasn't until I was in junior high when I started playing and getting more active in all the other sports that was offered at our school.
I think, you know, times were different then. So then it was, you know, we were all, a lot of us were multi-sport athletes. I think now, right, there's more of a focus on, you know, really honing your skill in that one particular sport. I remember my son played baseball, and then when he would go to golf, he said, "Oh, you know, it's going to ruin my swing, you know, my baseball swing." But for me, my big love was basketball. Mm. I played baseball. I played volleyball. You know, I was probably not different than many other kids where I was just, when I was playing sport, I was better. Mm-hmm. I was better in school. I was better all around. And I think it just was that structure that it provided me mm-hmm. and also just the teamwork. And I think in a lot of ways, very early on, what I didn't realize is that it was something bigger than myself.
Mm-hmm. I believe that you and I actually have baseball in common, being our first sports that we might have fallen in love with. And so for my little league and Babe Ruth teams, I was a pitcher, but I mostly played first base. And I noticed you were a second baseman for your little league team in Santa Monica. What was that experience like for you?
One thing that probably differs is that I, as a female, I was always, it seemed to be that I was playing sports and I was one of only a few females, if any. And I always felt like a little bit, I had a chip on my shoulder. I had to do really well. So I probably took, I mean, like anybody would take it hard if he didn't have a good play, didn't have a good throw, whatever that be. I took it very seriously because I felt like already I was sort of maybe less than in that environment. But again, you know, during the 1980s, which is when I was in high school, mid 1980s, there just wasn't, it wasn't like every single high school, especially some smaller private schools, didn't have every sport. Mm-hmm. So if they didn't have it, you just didn't do it, particularly for girls.
Mm-hmm. I get that. And so that's why I really want to jump into the details of your high school experience in your sporting years, because you just have the coolest story ever. And your ninth grade year at Newbridge High School, it just looked so very different than most male and female athletes when they were in high school. And you tried out for and made the boys varsity basketball team. And not only were you the only girl on the team at your school, you were also the only female athlete playing boys varsity basketball out of the 480 schools in the California Interscholastic Federation Southern Section. So walk us through that period of time and your thoughts to why you made that decision to try out for the men's basketball team.
At the time, there wasn't a basketball team for girls. And most of my friends that were, you know, other females in my grade were all doing theater and all the arts. And I enjoyed that stuff, but I loved basketball. And I went into my coach's office and I said, we don't have a girls team. You know, you can't, you know, there's not a girls team. And I said, I want to play. And he looks at me and he's like, you know, again, it was Title IX. So he looked at me and he knew he couldn't say no. And he ended up being sort of a mentor to me, but he said, suit up. And that was it. And I was on, and I actually will tell you that, but the reason that I did that, I think, was because it was the one space that I felt really at home. Mm-hmm. You know, probably like many kids, my parents had a divorce and all those things. But when I was playing and I was, you know, competitive and on the field and with my friends, whether it was the field or the court and with my teammates, I really felt like it was where I was supposed to be. I took that initiative and went to him. And I think those moments in your life, if you can think about those moments for you or you, Glenn, or you can think about those moments for your daughter, it's those pivotal moments where it doesn't seem like a big deal to sort of push forward on something, but it really can change the trajectory of your life.
No, I definitely agree with that. So when you approach your coach, Bill Rule, and said, hey, I want to play basketball with the boys, and him knowing that this was your first year of playing organized basketball, what do you think he saw in you to not discourage you from trying out and give you that opportunity to play on a team that was mostly filled with 11th and 12th graders?
I think that he went into education like a lot of educators do because they're passionate about helping youth. Mm-hmm. And I think he, two things that I think he saw, because I did a lot of private lessons with him as well, you know, to sort of continue to improve my game. Number one, I think he was genuinely in education to help people and to help youth. And he, so saying no to me would probably not have been, besides sort of violating Title IX, it also would have been just not part of his sort of MO. Mm-hmm. That's number one. Number two, I think he probably, I don't want to speak for him, but I think he probably either respected or liked that I was, that I, that the drive. Mm-hmm. And I always say, you know, you can't, you can teach a lot of things, but that's something you can't teach.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So you coming in as a 5'4" ninth grader and the youngest member on the team made up of 11th and 12th grade boys. Did you ever feel judged or was there a disconnect between you and your teammates because of the age and gender difference?
Definitely. There was a definite chasm. I would say that number one, among my team, you know, I'm a young white woman. I would say that there was, it was very diverse and the schools that we played were very diverse. Mm-hmm. Also, because I was the first female in the state of California to do this, and it was the 80s, and maybe it probably would be a bit different now. So before Me Too and all of those things, I think that nobody from a boy's perspective, they did not want to be scored on.
Right.
I mean, so when I would get wailed, you know, like if I was about to go up for a shot, I mean, I was like, I would get blocked. And, you know, I think that there would be some sort of, you know, saving face if that happened.
Yeah. Yeah. So how did the boys from the other teams treat you when you were on the court? And like, were your teammates protective of you during that time?
I would say that it was a mix. Mm. I had some that were and some that weren't. We played against another school. I think it was Bel Air Prep. Mm. And I made a very, very deep friend there, Sean Lewis, who's now a Los Angeles police officer. He's been that way for, you know, 30 years. And we still talk about that. And I met him just by playing against him. Mm. So I think that, you know, I did make a lot of friends. And I also sort of, I think more than anything, just gained confidence.
Yeah.
And it wasn't necessarily the confidence on the court. Yeah, that improved as well, but it was also just the confidence in life. Mm-hmm. That if I could do this, what else can I do?
Mm-hmm. So where did your confidence and mental toughness come from? Was it when you played Little League, or did you feel like the support you received from your family gave you that confidence you needed to compete against the boys who were bigger, faster, and stronger than and older than you were?
You're going to have adversity. Everybody's going to have adversity in different forms. And you don't really know anybody's story until you really dive in and talk to them. And in life, you have two choices when adversity hits, and it's going to hit. You can sink or you can swim. Mm-hmm. I am not sinking. And, you know, my parents had a bad divorce, and, you know, and I definitely wasn't, I love my family, but I don't think that was that support. I think it was, you know, in life, if you want something, you need to go after it. And basketball to me was a big, the ball, unless it's getting passed to you, it's not, you have to go after it.
Right.
if it's going off the court or if there's a pass or you want to intercept it. And so to me, that ball was really more of a, it really symbolized life.
That's a good analogy. You know, my wife actually grew up playing basketball too, and she had a full scholarship to play at American University in Washington, D.C. And she had that same type of toughness, you know, go-getter type of attitude growing up in New Jersey, you know, very tough. And she played in private school too against some of the best competition. And so it wasn't always easy for her, but I hear a lot of the same similarities when you talk about your confidence and mental toughness as, you know, she was developing her mental, you know, her confidence and mental toughness as well. So I just think it's so phenomenal how you guys both were in this same situation, but you had, you know, very similar circumstances of playing on basketball. And trust me, when that she and I would play one-on-one, you talking about boys that want to be scored on, I felt in the same category as well.
You just didn't want to be scored on.
So you played them harder, you played them tougher, you played them, you know, like you might have had to bump them a little bit hard because you was like, you know what, this is not going to be happening. And unfortunately, you know, like you said, in that era, in that time period, you know, boys who are, you know, 16, 17, 18 years old probably have a chauvinistic attitude and feel like you shouldn't be out here playing anyway.
I think you're 1,000% right.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, to speak also about your wife and some similarities or alignment that you see, you know, girls drop out of sport the rate of 2x boys do. And so I think, you know, we had a recent investor for Honest Game, and he loved the fact that my co-founder Joyce Anderson and I were athletes. And I asked him why. You may disagree, Glenn, or you may not, but I thought it was an interesting answer. He said, "I love to invest in female athletes." And I said, "Why?" And he said, "Because by nature, just I'm just purely talking about biology. Most of the time, men with testosterone, they're very competitive, and this is how they play, and they, you know, that's sort of how they communicate with each other. And women, females, are different. They don't have that testosterone, and they're not as necessarily as, you know, they don't always do it through sport or how they sort of whatever they're working through." And he says, "But when females play sport, they get some of that competitive edge." And he said, he feels like it translates to business and it translates to success. So I thought it was an interesting answer.
Oh, and I completely 100% agree with that. Completely agree. Yeah. So going back to your high school years, you know, you became Coach Rule's second string point guard. And I know you averaged about 4 minutes per game, and you pretty much played every single game. And he's quoted saying that you just didn't sit idly on the bench, and he didn't put you into play only when the outcome was no longer in doubt either. So you actually played a lot even when the game was on the line. So obviously he felt confident enough with your skills to put you in even during those high pressure moments.
Yeah, I was lucky that way. He really was a mentor to me. And I think he knew that even if I made a mistake, that I would own it. Mm-hmm. And that also that I had a lot on the line to make, you know what I mean? As you said, I had to work that much harder, guard that much tighter, because I didn't have the same height and probably the strength as some of the other players on the court.
So did you ever have one of those welcome to the big boy varsity moments where you felt like, you know, maybe I am a little in over my head?
I always feel I can do anything. Even if I can't, I'm going to die trying. And so I probably didn't have I'm over my head, but I will never forget one game where I went up to take a shot and I just got completely, you know, whacked down. You know what I mean? By, you know, it was just a block that was like fierce. And, you know, and these players were just, I mean, you've got players that are over 6 feet at that age, you know, 9, 10, 11, 12, 6'2". So I just remember thinking, whoa. And one of the ways that I always, I guess you'd say, tackle that is I can't change my height. I couldn't, on the court, I couldn't change my gender. But what I could do is just see how mentally tough people were. And I was like, I used to always think to myself, there's not a verbal, I can foul you, but I can't, what about a verbal foul? What if I sort of, you know, look in your eyes, maybe you're not that tough.
Right.
And so at least I felt like that was a way that I could get to people in a way that we were sort of on level playing field.
Yeah. Yeah. But you also played volleyball, softball, and baseball at Newbridge too, correct?
I did.
Yeah. So your baseball experience was very similar, I believe, to your basketball experience, because you also played on the boys varsity baseball team. Was there a smooth transition to baseball since you already played Little League and you knew what to expect by playing on the boys varsity basketball team?
Yeah, I feel like at that point I had less of I was like, oh, I've done this before. It wasn't my first love the way that basketball was, but I mean, you know, I think, Glenn, you probably hear this now. When you're a multi-sport athlete, I think it's probably you become a better athlete overall. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you're not sort of doing the same repetitive motion all the time. You're using different muscles.
Yep.
And so I think in some ways, maybe that helped me on the court mm-hmm. just become a stronger. Mm. Even though I love volleyball, but it wasn't my favorite. Mm-hmm. But again, I think that overall, it just kept me, first of all, it kept me on a team. Mm-hmm. It kept me with teammates. These were different kids on the teams. And also, I think it overall improved just my overall basketball game. Mm,
awesome. Yep. And it typically does that when you are playing different types of sports. And you were talking about because you love to play different sports. I actually love to play different sports too. But I think my second main reason why I wanted to play multiple sports is because I just didn't ever want to go home and have to do chores. You know what I'm
saying? Right. Oh my God. 1,000%. 1,000%.
So the longer I could stay at school, it was great.
And remember when we were growing up, Glenn, I don't know if you're probably younger than me, but when we were growing up, we didn't have social media.
Right. We didn't.
I mean, what was I going to do? I had three sisters. We had one telephone that was sort of our telephone line. So you could talk on the phone. Maybe you could watch some TV. I don't really do that. Like, it was just a different time. And growing up in California, we were outside a lot.
Yeah. Same here.
So it was right. So what are you going to do? I mean, in some ways it was super healthy. I would go to practice or go to a game, come back. Maybe take a quick shower, have dinner, and do homework.
Right. Yeah. That was our routine. Same here. And Kim, by the way, I was in high school in the 80s too.
I know. You caught me off when you said 6-year-old.
Yeah. Right. We started over.
Okay. Yeah.
So did you continue to play varsity basketball and baseball with the boys all through high school until you graduated?
No. It was in 9th grade. I switched high schools in that point. And then the high school that I ended up going to, and part of that was because it was a really good high school, but also because they had more teams. Mm. I ended up joining the girls team. So it was really just that freshman year.
Oh, got it. Okay. Cool experience. You know, when you were talking about the prep schools that you played in California, particularly Bel Air Prep, the first thing I'm thinking of was Will Smith and the Fresh Prince of Bel Air. And the types of kids that play at those types of schools.
Right. I mean, I kind of, you know, it's so funny because I think, you know, the years that I've passed, I mean, I'll talk about them. The high schools were different then.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so like I said to someone, oh, I went to this high school. That's a really good high school. I'm like, I don't know if it was that good when I was there, but it probably is now.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool, Kim. Look, there is the horn, and for us, that means it's halftime. So look, let's take 60 seconds, and then we'll get into the academic side of what you are doing at Honest Game. How was that?
Sounds great.
Okay, cool. We'll be back with Kim Michelson after this brief message.
LMH Strategies is a leadership, management, and human systems consulting company that specializes in business transformation, program management, and supplier diversity. The professional team at LMH Strategies brings a diverse range of national and global experiences in various industries to help your organization achieve its objectives and deliver measurable solutions. The LMH Strategies impact results in improved workforces, better businesses, and a brighter world. Commercial, government, and higher education markets trust LMH Strategies as their business partner. And the team at LMH Strategies welcomes the opportunity to earn your trust too. For more information, go to lmhstrategies.com.
So Kim, you weren't only an athlete, you were also a part of the drama club and acted in school plays while maintaining a 3.5 GPA. And I'm sure there were other girls at Newbridge that admired your courage and tenacity. Did you ever see yourself as a trailblazer for your peers who may have been watching what you were accomplishing and may have thought to themselves, you know, I want to do that too. And might I add, all this was still happening right before Title IX was put in place.
It's a really good question. I don't know that at the time, because I was young, if I thought of myself as a trailblazer, but now I have a very big passion when you talked about your 6-year-old, just helping other young females, young women believe in themselves. And if it doesn't work, it's okay. Just die trying, but have the confidence and courage to do that. So I think it was a little bit later that I felt that way, but I hope that I did. I hope that people, other females knew about me and said, well, she did that. I could do this, whether it's sports or something else.
I agree. You know, when I was in junior high, my science teacher introduced me to the world of engineering, and I was a member of the engineering club all through junior high and high school. And those experiences are what motivated me to study engineering in college. So did you have a similar epiphany while you were going through those athletic moments that motivated you to study communications in college and eventually to work in sports?
Yeah, just like you with engineering, I think where you get your early confidence mm-hmm. and you feel some success, it sort of tends to sort of duplicate itself. And what happened with me is I had a teacher at Newbridge. His name was James Lovelace. And he was a very tough teacher and he was a writing teacher. And he believed in me. When I look back at that writing, I'm not sure I believed in myself, but he believed in me. And he always said, you can do this. And he was the first time, you know, that it was really the power of a teacher. Mm-hmm. And because of that relationship, I ended up becoming a journalism major and being really focusing on communications. And I reached back out to Mr. Lovelace many years later. He was living on the south side of Los Angeles. He was a young Caucasian male married to a woman of color, really just dedicated to helping youth. And I just let him know that I said, you know, you really changed my life.
Mm. Yeah. We have a lot of teachers like that. And I had that for me as well. I can think of two, but it was definitely my science teacher who exposed me to engineering, who believed in me because of, you know, my grades in science and math that got me into doing what I'm doing now as an engineer. I don't do engineering anymore now, sure. But that was the catalyst to get me to where I am now.
It's interesting that you say that because people say, explain how you got from journalism to having a startup, or same thing with you, Glenn, right? You're not doing engineering. I don't know if you agree with me, but it's less to me about what you study and more about transferable skills.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
And if you can translate that into other things, and I think sometimes the world is very siloed and kind of myopic where they say, you did this and now you're going to do this and it has to all be the same. And I wish it was more flexible and open-minded and open, you know, just because it's a lot of the same skills you use in one profession, you're going to use in another.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. That's an excellent point. So what was that pivotal moment that led you from being an athletic trailblazer in high school to now becoming the executive director of Beyond Sports Foundation?
What for me was, I think, a really moment where you look inside of yourself and you look inside of your own heart and say, what gets me up in the morning? Mm-hmm. And my passion, although there's so many worthy causes, was helping youth, that maybe underrepresented youth, whether that means minorities, people of color, women, whatever that was because I wouldn't have had those opportunities if someone didn't give them to me. And I thought it was my job to pass that on. Mm. And so that was my passion, was no matter where you come from, no matter what you look like, no matter who your parents are, or what's been given to you, you can do it. And I felt like we all deserve equity in that lens. Mm-hmm. And so that was really my passion. And then when this opportunity came about to run as executive director of Beyond Sports Foundation, which is a nonprofit that helps under-resourced student athletes, I felt like I was equipped to do that. I'm sort of no nonsense and a little bit of a tough love. And I think that's what I needed. And I think that that's what many, many of the youth that I worked with needed as well.
Mm-hmm. So during your 5-year tenure as executive director, you rebranded the entire organization. You developed strong corporate partnerships, and 89% of the students that you guys work with enrolled into 4-year universities on athletic scholarships. So talk about how you guys were just so successful in getting that number of students into college on scholarship.
Many of the students that we took into our program had the athletic ability, but didn't have maybe the academic eligibility or the grades or the support at home. And all of them were under-resourced. So, you know, that we knew that they didn't have the financial wherewithal. You know, the rate of college is growing at a rate of 10x the average wage. Knowing this, and knowing that in Division I and Division II, there are $3.6 billion given out every year in aid. And at NAIA schools, just another division, it's over $800 million. So I felt my role was, and our team's role was, to really connect those students with those opportunities and have them equipped for them. That was sort of our focus. And we were pretty maniacal about it. If academics was the issue, we would get them tutoring. If credit recovery was the issue, we'd get them the credit recovery. If they didn't have enough money to travel for camps and clinics, we would help support that. Mm. And just sort of bridge that gap. And then again, I would hold them accountable to say, now it's your job to pay it forward. Mm-hmm. To youth after you.
Mm-hmm. Very impressive to be able to create that amount of change in such a short period of time. Now, despite the NCAA's insistence that it is concerned about student athletes' academic growth, you know, it often feels as though the word student plays second fiddle to athlete. And for those elite athletes, they grow up believing that myth. There are some that truly believe that their athleticism will overshadow making good grades, but you and I know that coaches can't take that risk of having a non-qualifier. So in your opinion, why do some athletes underperform in their classes knowing that their grades are the link to athletic opportunities?
I don't believe that they understand the link. I think when you're young and you're more focused on, you know, Instagram, Twitter, the new pair of sneakers you got, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that that's, you know, in a term I said, more fun, more sexy, more exciting. Academics is really not, doesn't fit in that bubble. Mm-hmm. I think there's three important things to open up for college athletic opportunities. It's number one, are you eligible and admissible? Number two, can you play? And number three, what's your character? And I wish, and I want to educate and work on this. And I think if we could just instill that, you want money for college, get good grades. Mm-hmm.
Simple as that.
Simple as that. It's three things. If there's anything that I can sort of reiterate, I don't want families out there to think, well, I need to spend a lot of money and hire this expensive recruiting service. No, just focus on the fundamentals.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So are you familiar with the term pluralistic ignorance?
I'm not.
Okay.
I would love to know.
So this is when it's when private preferences differ from perceptions of group norms. So mm-hmm. for an example, a student athlete may want to actually excel in the classroom, but they tend to think that their teammates are going to judge them for it. They mm-hmm. study a little less or they take an easier major. And it turns out that's how virtually everyone on the team may feel. But there's never an opportunity to realize that everyone on the team actually really does care about their academics. And it leads people to engage in public behaviors that align more with the perceived norms than with their true preferences. Mm-hmm. And the tragedy that's of a pluralistic ignorance is that the norms are false. And because in reality, everybody would be happier if they just behaved in line with their true selves.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. I've read several different stories where athletes, you know, they do care. They do actually do care about their grades. And there are athletes, and you said it yourself, when you're playing sports, because you're forced to keep up your eligibility, you actually tend to do better anyway.
Yeah. And most student athletes, I don't know the exact stat for it, but do better in season.
I agree. That was my son.
Yeah. You know? Because it's that structure. It's that structure that provides you.
Yep.
I might have mentioned this to you before, but in addition to pluralistic ignorance, which now I'm going to be using, I love it. But besides that, there's a lot of, I guess you'd say, if you look back, and I might have said this to you before, Glenn, but if you look back over the last 10 years, I think it's hard to know what's true and what's not. Mm-hmm. And there's so much data and information out there. I like to use the example of in 2014, that was when I guess the initial sort of coining of the phrase Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. In 2017, it was the Me Too movement. In 2017, Trump was inaugurated. Mm-hmm. In 2017, that was also when we heard the term fake news more. Mm-hmm. In 2019 was this Lori Loughlin scandal and everything that happened in California with the Varsity Blues scandal. And then in 2020 was COVID. And I know they all seem sort of like, oh, these are all these separate issues. But a lot of it is so much and just so much information, not knowing what's true and what's false, mm-hmm. a lot of lack of trust. And so for me, it's also about how do you know what you can trust? And for me, a lot of it is what's objective, what's data. Mm-hmm. It's not Kim's opinion. It's not Glenn's opinion. It's not somebody on CNN's opinion. It's just data. Mm-hmm. And I think that's like the one thing with public trust being as low as it is right now that we can all kind of trust. And that's at least what we're trying to do at Honest Game is really use data to help people make better decisions, mm-hmm. especially with where you have pluralistic ignorance and you have so much information and so much access to so much information all the time.
100% agree with that. 100%. And you know, I've always equated grades to credit because the better your grades, the more athletic opportunities you're going to have. And the worse your grades, the more you're going to make things just so much harder for yourself. And I'm just not sure that some of these kids are aware that academics are a key component of the recruiting process. And I know that you and Joyce have both worked with hundreds and hundreds of athletes. What are they saying and or how do they feel about the state of academics?
I believe that it's not just about the student, it's about the parent. Mm-hmm. And even when we have, you know, highly educated families, higher socioeconomic, there's just too much information to make sense of it. And it feels very confusing. Everything about the NCAA seems confusing. You know, how do you get there? And because they don't know, they'll either hire a recruiting service. So I think, but I do believe in my heart that all parents, the majority of parents, want the best for their kid. Mm-hmm. It's just how to get there. Mm-hmm. And they don't know that. And if we could just say, hey, you're doing it right. Focus on getting good grades. Because even at a D3 school, they give tons of merit money. You know, focus on your grades, focus on your character, make sure what you're posting on social is appropriate. And then the final thing is just, you know, make sure you're, you know, wherever you're athletic, you can play at the level you're, you know, and you'd be a value for them. You know, those are the things. And I think if we could just boil it down to sort of that simplicity, mm-hmm. I think it would help people. And I'm a big believer in parent engagement drives student engagement. Mm-hmm. And, you know, our thing is let's educate the adults in that student's village as well.
For sure. For sure. And look, I was an educator for a short period of time. And that wasn't my profession, but I was an educator for a little while. I understood the importance of it. You know, my son, you know, like most kids, they're up and down. So there were some years mm-hmm. he did phenomenally well in school. 3.2, 3.4, 3.5 GPA. And then there were some years where we had our challenges. I'll just leave it at that.
Right.
But for the most part, I always emphasize, I said, hey, listen, you don't even have to be a straight A student, but just do your work, study, just do the basics in order for you to, you know, be competitive both athletically and academically. So I had to really hone in the importance for him to of academics for him to be able to understand this is your ticket. You've got a skill. That's something that you're good at. So this is how you remain eligible because here's the alternative. If grades are going to hinder you from playing on the field or court, then you're no use to your team. You know?
That's right. That's right.
You can't say you're the man and you can't say you're the girl if you cannot take care of the one thing that keeps you eligible to showcase your talent.
100%.
Yep.
And for me, it's also about, you know, the next generation of youth, your son, all these other children, your daughter, we don't know, like, maybe they're going to create something that changes the world. So to me, I want to make sure that, like, do they need more education? I don't want them to be stuck with, you know, I don't want them to have $100,000, $75,000 in debt.
Right.
That's not a way to start their life. Mm-hmm. So if I can do it, I think education is really the great equalizer. And when you think of social mobility, how do we lift people up? And we don't know the next generation of youth and who that would be that is going to change the world. And so we need, that's our obligation to make sure we give equity and access to all. Mm-hmm.
So in sports, you know, everything revolves around academic eligibility. So what was the motivation for you and your co-founder, Joyce, to be able to create Honest Game?
When you work with enough students, Glenn, you start seeing patterns. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, the best inventions or the best innovation comes from that. Where is there a problem? And when one thing that I realized early on when I was at Beyond Sports working with, you know, hundreds of youth is that many of them would become academically ineligible, not just because of grades. And at the time, test scores were a requirement as well, not just because of test scores, mm-hmm. but they would become academically ineligible because they were missing a class or missing a credit, mm-hmm. or they didn't have enough, you know, they didn't have enough English. They call them NCAA credits. And it is a maze. And when a student transfers school, it almost becomes even the puzzle becomes bigger. Mm-hmm. What classes counted here and what classes count at their new school? And the NCAA, I'm sure they mean what they are is a clearinghouse. Mm-hmm. They're not there to guide a kid. They're a clearinghouse. If you were to, Glenn, order a package from Walmart, order a package from Wayfair or Amazon, and it's something you have to put together, it typically would come with some kind of directions. The NCAA eligibility comes with zero directions. Mm-hmm. Even if the directions are bad in your Walmart box, you'd open it up and say, oh, I got to put this part here. And so what Honest Game, when we created Honest Game, it was all about how do we guide people proactively? Because the NCAA as a clearinghouse is also very reactive. And by the time you find out that you're not a qualifier, it's almost always too late to fix it. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So you're right. I didn't want to make this conversation all about the athlete and poor grades because there are students that can become academically ineligible, and it has nothing to do with their grades. So they could have a nice GPA, but as you said, not be taking the right accredited classes, and it could still have them academically ineligible. So how do you guide athletes that may fall under these circumstances?
Our software, Honest Games software, it's the first platform that automates academic eligibility across all divisions of college sports, D1, D2, D3, NAIA, and junior college in real time. Only uses data from their high schools. So the data either has to be uploaded in a transcript or through some data file transfer with their school. And so basically what it does is it automates it, and it'll tell you, like, it's a roadmap or Google Maps. Glenn, here you are. Great. You have a 2.9 NCAA core GPA. You are on track with your academics. You only need a D2-3 for a D1, but you're missing 4 credits. And it'll tell you what those credits are. Mm-hmm. And it goes through, it does this sort of Google Maps and sort of direction guidance through every single division of sports. And one of the keys about Honest Game is that it connects the student, the parent, their counselor, the coach, the athletic director. So all of the important people in that student's village will look at the same information. Mm. So the chance a student would fall behind is much less likely.
Mm. So do you partner with schools, administrators, or school districts, or students, or all of the above?
I like to say, what I say in Honest Game sometimes is that there are many customers from, I like to talk about it a little bit, is the tyranny of too large of an addressable market. So we really believe in focus. Mm. And so we are, yes, individual sign up, and we can work with parents and students, and we work with youth club teams, and we work with junior colleges, and we work with colleges. But our real customer that we're focused on right now is high schools and high school districts, and we have hundreds of them across the country. Mm.
So who would be the ideal student to use your services?
In most high schools, any student, we track all students. Mm. Because what if you decided all of a sudden, Glenn, that you wanted to join late? You weren't in sports in freshman and sophomore year, but the eligibility clock starts ticking. So for us, it's less about, do you want to play? But it's less about that and more about keeping equity and access open to you. Mm-hmm. And so that we're not behind. And so for sure, every student athlete in a high school, but typically even we track all students, because we don't know if that student's playing club sports and not playing at their high school. We don't know if that kid's going to grow maybe a couple of inches and all of a sudden say, I want to play. And we don't want to find ourselves, as an administrator at a school, any of us don't want to find all of a sudden playing catch up.
Yeah, understood that. So I know that Honest Game has been helping over 200,000 users meet their college sports goals by becoming academically eligible and receiving athletic scholarships. What are the key factors that Honest Game has used to contribute to a fair and equitable opportunity for every student athlete to attend college and receive a quality education?
There are really 3 parts when I think of driving equity and access that Honest Game does deliver. Number one, our software. The track student in real time. It's also individualized to every student. So you'll know what you have to do. Don't worry about this teammate or that teammate. You're going to worry about what you have to do. And everybody has that information, because information is power. Knowledge is power. And it's unemotional. It's data driven. Mm-hmm. So that's the software is number one. Number two is we do something for high schools called an NCAA portal audit. Every high school in the country has an NCAA portal. That is where those classes we discussed are listed for NCAA accreditation. Mm-hmm. We make sure that is audited, similar to going to an accountant. If you've got, you purchase some stocks, or, you want to make sure that you're making the best out of sort of your own financial future. It's no different than that. We help schools and we kind of do housekeeping on the portal. Maybe there's classes that aren't approved, but could be approved. Mm-hmm. Great. We'll help them get them submitted. Maybe there's kids aren't getting a weighted credit for their classes, but they should be because they're taking honors and AP. So we do a fairly comprehensive NCAA portal audit, which is really, really helpful to school counselors. Mm-hmm. And the third piece that we do is a lot of professional development. We go into schools, we train, we teach parents, and we do it with and students, we do it with staff, and we just educate on the latest things with the college athletic pathway.
Mm. I love all of it. I love it.
Awesome.
Yeah. So one of Honest Game's success stories is Rashad Johnson, who actually used Honest Game's step-by-step academic plan to become a Division I academic qualifier and is now playing football at Lamar University. How exactly did that step-by-step plan help him become academically eligible?
So that's a great example. With that particular student, we would, we're working with the high school, and that student and the parent and the coach and the athletic coordinator, everybody saw he's not on track. he's missing some specific classes that he needs. And again, it's a bit of a maze, but Honest Games sort of points it out. This is what you need to do if you want to go D1, if you want to go D2. And so with our guidance, the team, his high school team, came together and put a plan together for him and made sure that he met them. And here's the great part. The student himself became excited about it because then they find that they have hope and they can see the future. And, you know, that's where the knowledge comes in. There was another student recently beside Rashad that we worked with in Chicago Public Schools who was very, very worried about academic ineligibility. We finally put his transcript through the software and said, you know, I know you think that, you know, this is a specific student who was actually homeless and living with his college coach. And he found very quickly that actually he wasn't that far off from eligibility because the classes he did very poorly and did not count for NCAA credit. So he got so excited. He's like, I'm going to class, I'm going to practice. And it was that sort of hope and motivation and sort of impact also on his mental health.
Wonderful. You know, eligibility rules in the collegiate academic landscape change often and will continue to change to help athletes get an opportunity to attend college. So are there any trends or changes in the sports and educational industry that you find particularly noteworthy that we all should be knowing about?
Yes, there are. Academic eligibility to college sports does change a lot. You know, in COVID, there was a COVID waiver. You know, there's things like that that change. Test scores now are becoming less important. And for D1 and D2 eligibility, test scores are no longer necessary. So there are changes. Several other sort of, I think, profound changes within the educational landscape right now. Number one is the expansion of school choice. What we're seeing with school choice is that many states are allowing families to choose. I'd like to take my tax money and instead of sending them to the local public school, I'm going to go to the private school. It seems great on the surface for families to be able to have that choice. What I caution your listeners to pay attention to is that academic eligibility, if you're a student athlete and you transfer schools, gets very convoluted and can increase your chances of becoming ineligible.
So what advice would you offer to parents and educators who are involved in guiding student athletes through their academic and athletic pursuits?
Focus on the basics. Make sure that, you know, students understand really it only comes down to those three factors we talked about. Your character, can you play at that level you want to talk about that you'd like to go to, and your academic eligibility and admissibility, and to focus on those three things. We're happy to help if we can be a resource to any of these families. We have a vast amount of materials and questions and answers and blogs available at honestgame.com. And we're here to support them. And if their high school is using us, we'll be able to support them that way. And if not, we can support them anyway.
Awesome. Kim, for those that are out there listening that would like to work with you and your team, why don't you just tell them how they can find you and connect with you on social media?
If you'd like to reach out to Honest Game to learn more, you can reach out to us at www.honestgame.com. Our 800 number is 800-917-9040. And social media is at Honest Game Cares.
Great. You guys have a wealth of information on all your social media platforms. And we actually repurpose a lot of that on our social media as well.
Glenn, thank you for having me. Thank you for, I'm really honored to be a part of this. Yeah. And if we can do anything to help any of your viewers, their families, their students, we'd be honored to do so.
I appreciate that, Kim. So before I get you up out of here, there's a fun game that I like to play with all of our guests who come on the field called the All Out Blitz. And this is a simple game where I'll ask you a series of fun questions and you give me the first thing that comes to your mind. Now, you can explain your answer if you want, but here's the catch, Kim. We have a 3-minute running clock and you got to get through it all before the final buzzer sounds, which is going to determine if you win or lose the game. All right.
Okay. Let's go.
So since it's the holiday season and Christmas is almost here, we're going to mix it up a little bit today with you today. So if there aren't any questions, let's go ahead and get started.
Okay.
Here we go. Question number one, what does a focus driven athlete mean to you?
Focus-driven athlete. Intention.
Okay. Question number two. Favorite Christmas movie or show?
It's A Christmas Story.
I'm not familiar with that one.
You aren't?
A Christmas Story? Which one is that?
Yeah. It's A Christmas Story.
The Is that shoot your eye out? Your shoot your eye out, kid?
Yes. Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah. Isn't that what it's called?
I think it's called something different. I think it's a little something different, but I get it. Yes. Okay.
Well, we can shoot your eye out. That is the shoot your eye out. And the leg lamp.
Yeah, okay. Right. Understood. He sticks his tongue on the light post.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
I watch that every Christmas.
Absolutely. I got you. Okay. Cool. Question number 3. Best Christmas song to get you in the holiday spirit?
Jingle Bells.
Okay. Not Silent Night by the Temptations or This Christmas by Donny Hathaway?
I like them all.
Okay.
I like them all. But I'm just doing the first one that came to me.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
All right, question number 4. If you could play basketball for any college male team right now, who would it be?
Duke.
Whoa, really?
John Shire, the head coach, is involved with Honest Games. So
perfect. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. They're 0-2 this past week.
I know.
Okay. Question number 5. Who do you think is the most competitive? A high school athlete trying to play in college. B, a college athlete who's hungry to get to the next level. Or C, an already established professional athlete.
I would say an already established professional athlete.
Okay.
What would you say about that?
I said B, a college athlete who's hungry to get to the next level.
Well, especially with NIL, you know, I think it's all, it's probably a toss up.
Yep.
But I work with a decent amount of professional athletes and I feel like they have this maturity and purpose and intention. And you said that I sometimes don't see without that kind of level of age and maturity.
Mm. Okay. Okay, cool. All right. Question number 6. What's the best song to get you hype before the start of a game?
Oh, best song to see me get hype. I don't know an answer to that one. I have a lot of music I like. Can I take a pass on that one?
You gotta give us one. Or just one, just make a one.
Okay, there's a silly song that I like that my kids tease me about because it's really old. It's called Cups, but I love that song. Do you know that Cup song?
I do not.
Where you turn the cup, I'll send it to you, Glenn.
Okay, appreciate that. Okay. All right.
You're gonna laugh when you hear it.
All right. Hey, look, if it works for you to get you hyped, to get you mentally focused, hey, we'll take it.
I love it.
Okay, cool. Final question. What topic would you like to see us discuss on Field Goals for the Focus Driven Athlete? And who would you recommend for us to interview that can speak to that topic? But before you answer, your job is to help bring this person onto the show.
I think that post-COVID, I think what we are seeing is a level of disengagement and also sort of from a student, from an educator perspective, also from just the post-COVID world, what does this all mean? I think from a mental health perspective, and I think we have an obligation to focus on how do we support youth, student athletes, and the people that are in their village there to support them from a mental health perspective. So I have several ideas of people. We just did a webinar, last week, and it was on sort of mitigating the risk of D1 bust mentality and really sort of opening up those pathways. And a lot of it was talked about mental health and making those choices in your life. So I don't know if you've had one, Glenn, that you focused on recently about mental health, but I think that would be an important one for youth right now.
Got it. Yeah, we've talked about it a little bit, but if you got some ideas and some people that we can talk to, that'd be a big help.
100%. And I'll make those connections
Perfect.
For you.
Thank you. Kim, look, there's the final buzzer. So how do you think you did?
I hope I did well. I can tell you this, Glenn, I had a lot of fun.
Good. I'm glad you did. We had a lot of fun with you too. And I'm going to tell you, I cannot thank you enough for coming on the field with us today. This has been a real treat. And like I mentioned earlier, I so enjoy it every time that you and I talk. And I've worked in the business of education for over 20 years now. And as you can see, athletics has become my new passion. So I'm really serious and committed to helping you and Honest Game in any way I possibly can. So just let me know how I can help. And I'm really looking forward to partnering with you all on future events.
I back at you. If I can help you, I feel the same way. You always make me smile. You're a light in this world. And thank you for bringing all this important education to your users.
Absolutely.
To your listeners.
Thank you, Kim. So I just need you to do us one final favor. We're always looking to pick up new listeners. So help us get your circle to listen to your episode as well as to subscribe to our podcast.
I will do that as soon as it's published. Okay. I will 100% do
that. All right. And one last question I ask everyone before I get them up out of here. Do you feel like you left it all on the field with us today?
I definitely left it all on the field with you today, Glenn. Right. So thank you for having me. And I feel like I can do anything because I just talked everything about my career, yeah. My sports, and I'm excited to hear about the next person that leaves it on the field with you.
For sure. All right. That's what's up. All right, peeps, you already know we got another guest, a great guest lined up for you. So make sure you hit that subscribe button so you can get an alert when the new show drops. And don't forget to share with your friends. Be sure to check out our website, www.myfieldgoals.com. Sign up to start receiving our newsletters and stay connected. All right, you know what's up. Kim is getting up out of here, and so am I. We'll see you in 2, which is going to be our last show for 2023. So stay tuned. That's a wrap. You've been listening to Field Goals for the Focus-Driven Athlete. Stay connected with us by liking our Facebook page, Field Goals. You can also join the discussion on our Facebook group page, Field Goals for the Focused-Driven Athlete. Also follow us on Instagram at MyFieldGoals. And be sure to head over to our website at www.myfieldgoals.com to subscribe, rate, and leave a review of our show. You can find us on Spotify, iHeartRadio, and all other podcast hosting platforms. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to having you join us again soon on the field.